Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Friday morning. And it's that time of the week. It's time to bring in our good friend Teron Davenport. And we're going to play a little game with Teron. I know, I just punched the mic like Rex Rode. I just pulled up.
We're having a really excited day. I don't know why you guys are taking abuse to my microphone.
What is going on?
I'm recharged, ready to go from the beach. I just got a lot of energy. Sorry about it.
If we could axe throw every day, this wouldn't be a problem.
Absolutely.
Come back, Big Joe.
We're going to play a little game with TD here. We learned last week that the musical talents in TD's family run deep. And he tried to like be humble about it and act like he doesn't have that talent. But he does. We all know that he does, and that's fine. Rexroad, you selected a song. We're going to get TD's thoughts on it as well. Without further ado, let's play the song, and then we'll bring in Teron Davenport.
I came in the door. I said it before. I never let the mic magnetize me no more, but it's biting me, inviting me to rhyme. I can't hold it back. I'm looking for the line, taking off.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us. TD, how's it going, my man? What are your thoughts on Rexroad's musical selection?
Hey, that is a brilliant selection. That's something that only a true hip-hop head would be able to pick because, you know, that Eric B. and Rakim, that take you back to 86, man. That's dope music right there.
Yeah, I knew you'd love that one. Actually, it's funny because on that Netflix hip-hop documentary, Daryl McDaniel from Run-DMC, he's like, as soon as that song came out, I'm like, I'm done. I can't hang with this. But, yeah, people don't love Eric B. and Rakim enough, do they?
No, they definitely don't get enough love. That's classic. Rakim is one of the best lyricists out there. And all these people, you know, talking about these guys now, man, there's no one on the planet right now that can mess with Rakim. You know, he's all these new school cats, they need to recognize.
I need you to sit down with my 12-year-old and, I need you to talk some sense into him because he thinks all the old school stuff is he loves all the new stuff. And I'm like,
kids.
Come on. Yeah, the kids these days, you know?
Yeah, no clue whatsoever.
It's about right.
So, Teron, we're going to talk about something here coming up on the show, and we're going to get into A.J. Brown. And it just got me thinking yesterday, like, what do we think A.J. Brown's ceiling is? We all saw the year he had last year. As a rookie, like when you forecast what A.J. Brown is going to be for this Titans team, what do you think that's going to look like?
I think a 1,300-yard season is something that is very attainable for him. And it goes back to the guy only got, 82 or 84 targets last year, and he gave you a 1,000-yard season. So when you look at everything, the yards per catch, that's going to come back down to earth. I mean, last year it was crazy, 22.4 yards per catch, second only to Mike Williams. And then you look at yards after the catch, the average, almost 9 yards. So those things are going to come back down, but they'll come back down as the targets go up. So, I mean, for me, the ceiling, honestly, is a top five receiver. He has that potential just because of his ability to get yards after the catch and turn into a running back after the football. But the thing that he really has to work on is getting in and out of those breaks a little more smoothly, a little bit more quickly. And then he's going to have to get better as far as his releases are concerned because, look, you're going against Tre'Davious White, Jair Alexander, those types every week. Not every week, but more consistently. That's going to be the person who draws your assignments. You have to really have a refined game in order to excel against those types.
What about the rest of that room, Teron? I look at it. Obviously, Corey Davis right now on PUP. You know, the hope that's going to be a short-term thing. And obviously, a lot of focus on him. I think we saw that this offense was better last year when Adam Humphries was healthy. It's interesting to me after that because Tajay Sharpe, a lot of people are going to overlook that loss. But I do think there's some significance to that. You know, a big-bodied guy who could come out, you know, make a play for you. Who could work in this offense, and they are small they're small after the top two. It's kind of a smurfy room. Do you think they need another kind of bigger receiver somewhere to emerge and be on this team?
You know, honestly, I think they have that bigger receiver. Cody Hollister is a solid player. He's he's, what, 6'4" or so. But, you know, you see him sometimes getting those routes, like running those routes where you have to, you know, change direction. It's a little difficult for him. But the guy that I think you have to watch out for, and he's not the biggest player, but he plays big, and that's Christian Wilkerson. And he's from SEMO, Southeastern Missouri State, which is the same school as John Robinson. He was an undrafted free agent, but a high-priority one. If you watch some of the things that he was able to do, he's a solid player. One of his best games came against Madre Harper, who was in the Raiders camp. And I think he could be that perimeter guy, but also move around and play the slot. But you're right, losing Tajae Sharpe, it definitely hurt them more than people really realize.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, on the line with us. And TD, obviously, we look at Ryan Tannehill. He signs the contract. His efficiency last year was just insane. Yards per attempt, everything about it. It's likely that those type of numbers will come down this year in terms of how efficient that he was last year. But what do his numbers need to look like, in your opinion, this year to be confident that this Titans team can take that next step?
Yeah, it's likely that it'll come back down to earth. But one thing that's going to help is having Adam Humphries. I think that's going to help that completion percentage. So I'm not expecting a real drastic drop. I think if he could be in that 65 to 68% completion, they'll be right on point. But the main thing I think for him is that average per completion. And they're going to continue to try to hit those home runs. And I think that has to be high in order for them to be able to do what they want to do, because they have to stretch the field and take advantage of the things that are happening in the box, because, you know, teams are going to stack the box. So that play action has to continue to be potent for them, especially when you have these guys getting one-on-one coverage. So that's really where it's at. I say 65 to 68 completion percentage. I would say in the 3,500 to 4,000 yard passing, and he's going to need to be in the 20s on touchdowns.
All right, I need to gauge your excitement level, TD. It's day one of us getting to watch some football. I'm excited, but I know how much you love football. I know you're pumped for this. Of course, I was just talking last segment, we might get rained out. But if that's the case, I assume you would still be in the indoor watching, correct?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be one of the three of us.
Oh, so
but I'm not
one.
Sure how okay. That rotation. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I'm hoping that I would be the one, but you got to pay respect to seniority, you know what I mean? And Teresa Walker, if it's just one, it's probably going to be her. And, you know, I just have to be in the parking lot listening, you know, and trying to calm down the excitement. Man, I've been up since around 6 a.m., and I'm actually at the facility now. I have to get ready to go in for testing. But, yeah, man, hopefully it doesn't rain, but it's rather gray out here, so it's more than likely.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd had the Q-tip in there. Yeah, will this be your first COVID test then?
No, this is actually going to be my third.
Okay.
And it's funny. I told Teresa, I said, you know, if they administer the test where they stab the back of your skull, I'm not doing it. <You know? laughs> But it's an interesting way that they do it. They do a nasal swab. It doesn't hurt. It makes it a little uncomfortable, because it's kind of like I told my daughter this morning, because she asked me what the test was like. And it's like, you ever, like when somebody, when you're in a field or in the grass and somebody grabs the grass and they kind of brush it along your skin and you get that, like, everything just get that chill?
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like that, but inside your nose.
So hopefully it happens. We can all watch. And if that's the case, and again, so the three rotating will be you, Teresa Walker, Eric Bachrach from the Tennessee, and you are the triumvirate of, we know one of you will watch everything. The rest of us, you know, if it's outside, we'll get to watch it. But if there's one thing on day one that you're most interested in seeing, what would it be?
I you know, I have to go with the guy from Green Mile, man. You know, Isaiah Wilson. I want to see how well that big fella can move, because I want to see it in person. You know, I've seen him in person at the combine, but I want to see him actually on the field moving around. So it will probably be him, man. You know, he has that that size and athleticism that's just fascinating.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. TD, thanks for joining us, man. As always, have fun today. Good to have football back.
Yeah, for sure, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. Give me that extra charge, man, with that Eric being rock in, for sure.
That's what we're here for.
There we go.
Look, we're just here to pump everybody up. That's what we do.
See you, man. See you out there.
Teron Davenport, right. Ladies and gentlemen, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Wow, you got him. You're on his good side now. I was nervous for you with your musical selection.
You know what's funny?
Like, what happens if he hates it?
When I talked to him,
he knows the classics.
He was like, I bet you it's Wu-Tang. And I told him, I was like, no, I told Joe not to do that.
Oh, yeah, he knows you
did.
Too well.
You steered me away from the obvious.
I told
good
him,
job.
It's too easy, man. Like, TD, Wu-Tang, that's like easy. I sat next to TD at that Wu-Tang concert. And, the eyes on his face is just bright.
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
Just
I'm,
bright.
I'm so jealous.
Every song TD was rapping to. Every single song. He would not stop. Every song on that album. He was rapping to, so.
Well, good for you for not picking that, Joe. I'm glad Munson talked you out of that.
They better come back.
When we come back, we'll get into the A.J. Brown discussion. TD just said he thinks he can be a top five wide receiver in the NFL. Do we agree with that? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think it's just he just has to continue to mature and put the work in that he's been doing. I think there's a natural progression that comes along with it as long as you work. And he's been putting the work in. He's been focused. He's been healthy. And, we just look for him to continue to work hard and continue to progress. I don't see any reason why that shouldn't happen. He's right in that matter with some times where fatigue got the best of him. And that's something he made a priority of this offseason. He came back in really, really good shape. His focus, I think he has a even better grasp of the offense than he did before. And I think, he came in with a hunger that's evident in the way he's been preparing.
That was Titans wide receiver coach Rob Moore talking about A.J. Brown, who, of course, had a phenomenal rookie season for the Titans last year. Now looking to take that next step, Joe. And when I evaluate A.J. Brown, obviously, when you watch him play last year, the big thing that jumps off the page to you is what he's able to do after he catches the ball with the ball in his hands. I mean, his yards after catch, the way he runs with the ball, how difficult he is to bring to the ground. That was so impressive. And you saw it some at Ole Miss as well, but I think he surpassed even my wildest expectations of what he could look like last year. The question I have now moving forward is, okay, what does that mean about A.J. Brown and what his ceiling is in the National Football League? You heard TD in the last segment said he think he could be a top five wide receiver in the NFL. Is that too high? Is that just about right? Where do you think A.J. Brown's ceiling is?
No, I think eventually he can be. This year, that would be ambitious. The thing is, when we talk about things like that, they're very much tied to statistics.
Yeah.
I don't know in this offense if A.J. Brown is going to have a 100 catch, 1,700 yard season.
Are you about to bring up Corey Davis blocking again?
Corey Davis, good blocker. A.J. Brown also, by the way. Good blocker. Don't underestimate that part of his game.
Hey,
it's the game of football. Blocking and tackling. You start with the blocking and tackling. No, but I'll share a quote. Yesterday was cool. What the Titans did something different yesterday in terms of interviews. It just, look, as a fan digesting information, we've said this before, you're going to have less stuff. You're going to have less variance. It's going to be a lot of the same stuff. It's just how it is in any sport. Everything's on Zoom, all that stuff. The Titans mixed it up and said, here's three links with all the assistant coaches. So you can go into one and go to another one. It's kind of like if they bring assistants out, you walk around and talk to whoever you want to. So I got in there with Rob Moore, and I tweeted this quote out, but I think it's a really strong quote. The thing you love about AJ is he loves football. He loves football. It's his life. It consumes him. Then there's a few things he said, then more of that. He's a guy you've got to send home, always searching for different ways to run routes, just a football junkie, if you will. That kind of stuff, do not underestimate that. Do not overlook that. I mean, coaches talk about this all the time. Kevin Byard is that guy. if you've got a guy who loves this stuff so much that they want to get better on their own and digest hours of film and work on those little things, A.J. Brown's talented enough to be a good receiver in the NFL without that stuff.
Sure.
He is. But when you find guys like that, a lot of times those guys get to their ceilings or close to their ceilings, and sometimes they go past what we thought their ceilings were. So long-term, I think A.J. Brown can be a great player in this league. Again, the numbers may not always reflect that, may not reflect it this year. And there's going to be some hesitation with him until what he needs, if we're talking about, he doesn't need us to say anything, you know, just go play football. But for more people to believe that, he needs one of those games where a top flight cornerback is traveling with him and he has 8 catches for 120 and 2 touchdowns anyway. And it's like, okay, look at him get off press coverage. Look at him win those battles and produce even when he's the focal point. Maybe he's being traveled with and they're bracketing him a lot of the game too. You know, that's what he's got to prove. But look, you can't ask for a much better year than he had as a rookie.
No, and to your point, that is when you go back and look at the New England game, the Baltimore game, the Kansas City game to a certain extent, there was some of that in the playoffs in terms of they keyed in on him. Obviously, Derrick Henry is the main focal point of the Titans offense, which he's going to be again this year, and that's going to help A.J. Brown. But I did think, you know, Gilmore was on A.J. Brown for a lot of the New England game. He struggled to get open against him. That next step for A.J. Brown has got to be, all right, I'm the number one guy on this team in terms of the wide receivers. I've got to find a way to beat press coverage. I've got to find a way to create separation off the line of scrimmage and do that on a consistent basis when you know you're going to be going up against that team's best cornerback, whether they're shadowing you the whole game, whether they're playing like Richard Sherman does and he basically just sticks on one side of the field. Like, you got to find different ways to attack these secondaries. That's the next step for him. But I think physically, I mean, he's got the tools to do that. He's a strong guy, obviously, as evidenced by the fact that it's almost impossible to bring him to the ground after he catches the ball. He's not a burner. I don't think he's ever really just going to run past anybody, but I think he's got enough skill set or enough of the skill set required to get off of that press coverage and to be the physical receiver that at times you're going to have to be in this league to create some room.
Yeah, and still make plays vertically, as he did against the Raiders last year. The thing, it's not an exact translation, but if you're that strong and that good after the catch, to me, you should also be someone who's strong at the line of scrimmage and able to get off that stuff. And I think if you're a technician too and you understand that that's one of the next steps for you as a player, I think there should be a lot of optimism about A.J. Brown. I mean, he's the last of this offense's worries. Now, if Corey Davis can take advantage of what A.J. Brown does this year or what teams are going to be looking at and how they're going to plan, looking at Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, then you think about this offense. You know, think about what you could have there. And some of A.J. Brown, too, and maybe both of those guys, is Ryan Tannehill. And let's not forget that Ryan Tannehill has not quarterbacked this team for a full season. So maybe there's a situation where this year Tannehill lets it rip a little bit more, is a little bit more comfortable just throwing some 50-50 balls.
Yeah.
You know, AJ's way and Corey's way, and lets those guys make plays, because that's, like you said, they're not burners. They are never going to be just run a go route and take the top off the defense guys, but they are guys you should feel good about winning one-on-one battles for the football.
And to your point, like TD brought it up in the last segment, 84 targets last year for A.J. Brown. That number, if he's healthy, is going to go way up. I mean, you would assume that's going to go way up into the 120s, 130s, 140s at least, would be my assumption with Tannehill as the full-time quarterback. You just look at his skill set with what Arthur Smith was able to do with that offense. We saw Jonnu Smith carry the ball out of the backfield. We saw A.J. Brown take handoffs on jet sweeps. I wonder how prevalent that becomes this year in the offense in terms of finding different ways to get the ball in A.J. Brown's hands, because if he's that good with the ball in his hands in terms of how difficult he is to bring down, I think the Titans and Arthur Smith are going to get really creative this year in terms of different ways they try to get in the ball. Yeah, you're going to have your traditional, hey, just go run your route, we'll throw you the ball. That's going to be the lion's share of what happens. But we've seen Arthur Smith is willing to get creative with this offense and find different ways to get his playmakers the ball when he has to.
Yeah, you think about Derrick Henry, and it's always, okay, there's a number of carries with him that, I mean, all running backs want that number to get into a rhythm and also to wear down a defense. Everybody talks about wearing down a defense. Obviously, you have to think about wear and tear on the running back too. But if you're Arthur Smith, you think about a worn-out defense in the fourth quarter, you also want them having to tackle A.J. Brown, and you want them having to tackle Jonnu Smith.
Yep.
Like in those three guys, I cannot – there is no way that there's another trio like that in the league in terms of – what's the word? Just discomfort in tackling. You know, tight end, receiver, running back.
Especially when it gets like into November and December and it's cold and you're like, man, I really don't want to go hit this guy.
Right. Like that's why I love that little, that sort of like deep pitch to Jonnu Smith they ran. And they did a few little, at least, I don't know if they did reverses. They did at least a couple jet sweep things with AJ too.
Yeah.
I mean, just get it in their hands and say, you know, go tackle that guy. They're like, please, like throw it to Adam Humphries. Like, we want to tackle Adam Humphries. Adam Humphries, again, as TD pointed out, when he's in this offense, that's another little element of I can get 7 yards whenever I want to. He's so great with change of direction in the slot. But, yeah, those three guys trying to tackle him, that's a big asset. And there's a cumulative effect from all three of them. And I do think Jonnu Smith is a guy who, if there's a guy whose production is going to take a leap, I would think it would be him.
I know if you're a Titans fan, it's got to be exciting to have a conversation about a wide receiver that's not a bust. Like, they've been trying to draft a wide receiver around here for 20 years that turned out to be good. Like, and good's not what I'm looking for, a great wide receiver. They've been looking for a great wide receiver around here for a long time.
I mean, since Derek Mason, right?
Yeah, since Derek Mason. I mean, that's the last guy they had that was really a game breaker.
And the only guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the only guy since they've been in Nashville.
Yeah, they've drafted Britt. They drafted Tyrone Calico, Justin Hunter, Corey Davis, fifth overall, and none of it's worked.
DGB,
second rounder, right? Like, yeah. None of it's worked. It feels like A.J. Brown's that guy. Now, it's 1 year. I understand that. People have good years and then fall off the face of the earth. It doesn't feel to me like that's going to happen with A.J. Brown.
Like, a lot of Titans fans right now are like, man, don't jinx it, okay?
I know,
it's
right?
It's been 1 year. But, yeah, I mean, and that pick kind of – you know, the Davis pick, if you're looking at this tenure of GM, obviously it looks like that pick is at least somewhat making up for taking Corey Davis too high.
Yeah. That still doesn't excuse Corey Davis in my book.
Sure. But so it's like two guys. What was he, 50?
Is he 51?
51.
50, I have to go look.
51. So yeah. Two guys at an average of 28,
yeah.
If you want to look at it that way. If you want to. If you don't, you're justified.
When we come back, Terry Crist, the legendary Terry Crist, will join us, Preds TV analyst. We'll dive back into the Preds and get his thoughts. Always entertaining with Crispy. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. And Joe, we're bringing in one of my favorite people on the entire planet. Terry Crist, Preds TV analyst, joins us now on Morning Drive. Crispy, what's up, my man?
Hey, fellas. I'm like everybody else. I'm still a little stunned, a little aggravated, a little perturbed. Could add a few other words. And still really not getting back into the hockey mode yet. I will start, though, but it's sort of not the same when your team's not in it. But again, we'll sit down, we'll figure out what happened, and look forward to next year, by the way. And hopefully all goes well. We get all of this behind us. We can all safely get back into the Bridgestone and watch our Predators playing hockey again.
Amen. All looking forward to that day for sure. Crispy, when you look at the Arizona series and kind of dissect what happened in that series, what's your reaction to the loss, and where do you think things went wrong in that series?
Yeah, first off, my reaction is just that in the world of sports, nothing is given. Nothing is definite. So whether you're number one seed, number 18, it doesn't matter. The other team doesn't care. If you're below them, you figure you can beat them. If you're above them, you figure you're the team that should win it. And in the world of sports, we all know things go wrong. Excuse me. I think the biggest thing, and I warned our guys about this when we were being interviewed before this series, was that I know their coach, Rick Tocchet, very, very well. And I coached Rick in junior hockey, and he was my captain for a while, so I know, and I watched him play his NHL career, and I knew that his team would come out hard and fast and come at you. And they wouldn't respect the fact that you were a higher seed. They wouldn't respect the fact that you had this name and this name and this name. The only thing that the Rick Tocchet teams know is that they work. They're like the Columbus Blue Jackets and a few other teams out there that you know from start to finish, 60-plus, whatever it takes, they're gonna run you and play you. And that's exactly what the Arizona Coyotes did. The one area I thought that we had it, we just couldn't bury our early scoring chances. And how many times, guys, have you heard that? We have said, we worked, like, come out of the chute. Great scoring chances. And you give the other team's goaltender credit. Yes, you know, we have to. But you also have to look at the scoring chances we had and the guys that had them and didn't bury the puck. And those are the things I look back on and say, you know, we can say everything we want, but we have to get our goals. We have to score goals. And we can't keep saying, well, our goaltenders are going to hold us in, or they're no. And I look back at that series and say, we didn't score the goals. And when we got that goal that Philip Forsberg scored, God bless him, with, what, 31 seconds, that should have put us on a level that we come out of that dressing room, we should have come out flying. It was the opposite. So that still sticks in my craw.
So, Crispy, a couple of years now of, you know, a lot of frustration in the regular seasons. Obviously, you know, losing the first round to a really good Dallas team, and now to this Arizona team that, you know, to me, Nashville is better than and should have defeated. So what needs to change? Do you think that there is a, you know, I don't know if it's an attitude, an approach, something intangible in that locker room that needs to be significantly changed?
You know, fellas, excuse me, got a coffee here. I was on the Zoom, listening to the Zoom yesterday when all you guys, and Joe, you and Robbie and Rex and them guys were all interviewing with or questioning David Poile and Coach Hines. And I thought it was very informative. I thought it was very good, and the questions that you guys threw at them were very, very poignant, very right to the fact, and that David and Coach Hines answered them very, very well and touched on all of the things that they felt went wrong, what they wanted to do. And the one thing that kept popping up on both of their things was that we have to make those changes. Changes have got to be made. Well, we know that. We're a better team than what we played against Arizona. So what I was waiting for was, and they kept saying, we have to get mentally stronger, mentally tougher. Well, I'm sitting there listening to this, and I'm thinking, you know what? I've never been in a room yet that I can pick up a machine that makes me mentally tougher. I've never been in a meeting that can do that. The only time I can say I can be mentally tougher is when I looked in the mirror and looked at Terry Crisp and said, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with your game? Why aren't you playing your game? And there's no other reason. So two things that I was hoping for is we have to get mentally stronger. Well, you know what comes hand and foot with that? Physically stronger. Your team has to be able to go out there and back each other up and take a hit, give a hit, protect each other, go to the front of the net, take a bashing. I go back to the one player that I loved here, Patrick Hornquist. And every time I get excited, I say, we need a couple Patrick Hornquists on our team. So you can say all the things you want. You can go through all your penalty kill, power play systems. To me, mentally tough is an individual thing. Individuals mentally tough. And also along with that, physically tough.
Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst, on the line with us. And Crispy, you know this better than anyone. If you're a fan out there and you've been following the Preds for any length of time, you know how long it took to get some center icemen to come in here that were game breakers, that could change the game offensively. And then Ryan Johansson comes in, Kyle Turris, Matt Duchene. I want to focus specifically on Johansson for the sake of this conversation, because we saw it in the series against Arizona. When he's on, he can be absolutely dominant. The problem is he's not on all the time in the regular season. As a coach, how do you coach a guy like that where you see it, you know it's there, you know it can be dominant? How do you bring that out of him more often in the regular season?
You know what? if I could answer that for you, I'd still be coaching and making a lot of money. Making a lot of money. Joey's one of those talented athletes. He's very skilled, very talented. When we got Johansson, let's be honest, we didn't have a real first-line center at that time. We didn't, and we all admitted that and knew it. But we had Boisier, we had some good things, and he fit the bill perfectly, and still does. Johansson still fits the bill perfectly for us. When Joey plays his game, he's on top. And I always say, and this is sort of funny, and I hope Joey doesn't get mad at me for saying this, but I always hope that somebody runs over him early in the game and ticks him off and makes him mad. Then we see Johansson playing his game. Remember the year he went toe-to-toe with Kessler? That was one of the best hockey series I've seen. He decided that he was going to outplay Kessler. Now, Kessler was a tough, hard-nosed centerman and skilled. Joey outplays him. That's the Joey I remember and know that we have. The good part is we still have him. He's still here. And he still has what we're just talking about. And Joey will be the one that has to bring that out. We talked about center. We went on and got Matt Duchene. We know he's skilled. We know that Matt Duchene is a very skilled athlete and that he can do the job as to why David Poile made the trade and signed him for that. And then you get on with Nick Bonino. I love Nick Bonino. This guy does it all, Sam. So when you go down, and Kyle Turris, you know what, I like Kyle Turris. He's a class gentleman, and he's got skill. And I think right now with Coach Hines, and I think maybe Coach Hines has found the button or whatever the push to make Kyle Turris the player that he knows he himself can be, and that the hockey world feels that he can be. So having said all of that, those guys are still here. They still get a chance to, I don't want to use the word redeem themselves, but to make this all happen for our hockey club.
Well, you mentioned coaching, so I'm gonna actually have you keep the coach hat on, Crispy. And I actually asked this of David Poile yesterday in regard to Matt Duchene. And basically the question of what would best complement Matt Duchene to get the best out of him. This season was not his best. He's had, you know, better performing seasons. But just when you look, if you're looking at as a coach putting lines together and you're looking at Matt Duchene, what do you think best suits him as line mates?
I think with Matt Duchene, he's a smart, he's a clever hockey player. He reminds me of not per se the skill, but of a guy like Paul Kariya or Radulov. He's a playmaker. He can make plays. He can pass the puck through traffic. He can see the plays coming. He sees them setting up. I look at Matt Duchene and I say, give him Forsberg. Forsberg is a natural goal scorer. When he's on his game and Forsberg wants to control it and he's snapping that puck, he is a force to be reckoned with for goal scoring. So if Duchene is a player that can get the puck to him consistently, then that, I like that one right there. On the right side, Arvey's a buzz bomb. He does it. But if Arvey gets tired and he needs some, I would put get a solid, solid winger that can dominate the corners, dominate the front of the net, and either get the loose pucks to Duchene or go to the front of the net and give Duchene and Forsberg room to move and maneuver the pucks before he makes the plays is what I would look at with him. But having said that, if I was a player and I was playing with Matt Duchene, I'd tell Matt, I'm going to get in the open somehow, somewhere, and then I can tell you what, Matt Duchene will get the puck to you.
Terry Crisp on the line with us, Preds TV analyst. Crispy, last thing for you here. What did you make of the way that UC Saros played in the series against Arizona, and kind of how do you view the Preds' goaltending situation moving forward into next year?
I love UC Saros. I love Pecorino. They're both class people, of course. Pecorino, to me, is one of the classiest guys we've had wear our jersey. It still is. And how he handled this. And UC Saros deserved the shot that he got. He won, what, 8 out of 9 coming down the stretch. Coach Hines, and this is where coaches have to go with their gut feelings a lot of times, too. You love the Pecorino, you love whoever there, but for the good of the team, you think this is what you should do. Hey, sometimes you're right, sometimes we're wrong, sometimes it works and whatever. And I have no qualms whatsoever with our goaltending, but with how it was done, what they played. Of course, we all wanted a better result, but I'm sure not knocking Saros. And one day we will know that Pecorino will be back doing what he has to do for us. I like our goaltending. You guys said it, and David and them said it yesterday. Coach Hines said, we have a great, David didn't say 1-2 or 1-1.
They're two good, solid goaltenders. Two very good goaltenders. And we're lucky in that one. So when we open up next year, our strength won't be worried. Don't worry about goaltending. That's in place. Some other areas, you'll tag and tab, but not that. And the other thing I do know is that we still have the best fans in hockey. And they will be back there to give our guys the boost they need.
That's right. Terry Crist, ladies and gentlemen, legendary Preds TV analyst. Crispy, it's so good to talk to you, my friend. Hope you and the family are doing well, and we'll hopefully see you soon.
Hey, thank you very much, and just to all of our people down there in Nashville, all of our hockey family, the Predators family, and all of the family. Y'all stay safe. Keep your family safe, and we will get through this together.
Absolutely. Thanks, Crispy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dallas.
When we come back, we're going to dive into a little bit more of the DNA of the Predators. What's it going to take for David Poile to turn this ship around starting next season? That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 again.
We had a lot of success, in my opinion, in our organization in the last 5 years. I mean, going to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning our division, President's Trophy, winning rounds of the playoffs. And as I said in my remarks, the last 2 years, we're not trending in the right direction. And it's with a lot of the same players, as you're pointing out to me. So am I disappointed? Of course I'm disappointed. Do I see the possibilities of us being better with these same players? I absolutely do. But again, I'm saying that we got to make some changes. It's not going to be the same. And a couple of years ago, I sat here saying that I felt that we were really close, and that in conversation with the players that they really wanted another chance. Well, I don't quite feel the same way today. I think there's some movement on our team would be good, bringing in some younger players for sure. I teased a couple of those guys, some energy, some spark, some different type of guys. But internally, you know, you're not changing the whole team. So internally, as I've talked in the previous question, this is a team sport. And we have some guys that have to take their game up another notch.
That was Preds GM David Poile yesterday discussing his roster as we look ahead to next season for the Nashville Predators. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe, I listened to what Poile has to say there, and it just gets me wondering, like, how close is this team to competing for a championship? Because the last couple of years, we've asked that question, and we've all felt like they're pretty close. Like, they're not that far removed from 2017, where you made it to the Cup Final. They went the President's Trophy the next year. Even though the last year was up and down, you still won the division. You get put out in the first round against Dallas. It just feels different to me right now. It just feels like the window is shut. And it's hockey. Things can turn around very quickly. I mean, the Blues got put out by the Preds in the second round, 2017. 2018, I think they missed the playoffs. And then they come back in 2019 and win the Cup. So things can turn around pretty quickly in the NHL. But it just feels like this group right now, as constructed, needs some reconstruction, and that could take some time to reopen that window.
Yeah, it's tough because I messed up the button again. Dang it!
Munson is just loving
it.
Yeah,
he's laughing at me right now. See, I'm not going to compliment you now for playing Led Zeppelin the Rover last segment. That was awesome. Okay, I just did.
Yeah.
I'll be nice, though. Man, I used to be – I thought I had the buttons figured out. You know, the thing about the Blues, that's a great example, Robbie, of where it's so hard in hockey to make declarations about windows, I think. I mean, we've seen them axe two head coaches in the past, what, four seasons?
Yep.
Mid-season, and then have these huge turnarounds. And honestly, for them, what was it last year that changed? Bigger than anything? Their goaltending got
that was it.
Really good. I mean – the Blues have a core that I would have sworn to you. Like when the Preds beat them in the second round of 2017, I looked at the Blues and I said, see, that's a nice team, and that's a team that's good enough to, like, get in the playoffs in a lot of years. That team's never going to do anything.
I felt the exact same way.
That core's not going to do it. And then last year it was just like, look at these guys are a machine. So now I think with some of them, if you want to make a difference with the Preds, obviously intangibles with the Blues, they've got some guys who drive that. They've also got some big, strong guys who are a part of that. They've got some skill, some really good players. Look what they've done this year without Tarasenko.
I know, it's scary.
You know, but so, like, I hesitate to sit here and say the Preds' window is shut. I mean, look at the Blackhawks, okay? So the Blackhawks, and they're about to lose to Vegas, but they loaded up some terrible contracts and were in a terrible situation, and now they've got young kids coming, and you can kind of see where some of those young kids coming on with, you know, those three veterans in particular who are still holdovers could be pretty good. Now, the difference with them is they've got rings to show for all the trouble, but it's been kind of a quick comeback to this, you know, if this is truly where it's going for them. So I think in the NHL, a lot of it is like, can you feel good about getting into the tournament? And if you can, you got a chance, because how could you say otherwise when a Preds team that went in with much less of a standing than a lot of them in 2017 was the one that got all the way to the end?
Right.
So I struggle with that. I think it's easier in other sports to identify windows and say, okay, it's over. You have to blow this up, or you have 2-3 years with these guys on this contract, and you're going to do X. In the NBA, I mean, you can look at teams, and you can project almost an entire postseason going, you know,
pretty much chalk.
Right? So it's very difficult. I still think there's a chance with the Preds that, with some of the key guys they have, maybe waking up and finding some things. We start there with Johansson and Matt Duchene getting better, and then some moves that work out to supplement them, that they could be back. I also think that when you talk window in the Preds, you do have to talk about goaltender and whether Saros is a guy who can take you to four rounds of the postseason. Not knocking him. He's a good goalie. Is a good goalie enough?
Right. Let's go to Nate, who wants to weigh in on the Preds. Nate, thanks for calling into Morning Drive.
Hey, guys. I don't think we can say that the window is definitely shut. I want to say that if we do end up keeping the core together, we need to develop the guys in the AHL and bring them up, because I feel like when we made the cup run 16-17 season, we had a few players that kind of surprised the NHL, like Victor Arvidsson. No one was expecting him to fly around like, you know, a bat out of you know what. And I feel like, you know, we could potentially surprise the league if a Tolvanen would come and light up the world, or, you know, if whoever came up from the AHL and played real well.
Thanks for calling, Nate. I agree. I mean, look, Tolvanen's the guy that's going to dominate the conversation around here, because he's the guy we've been waiting on for so long. To me, the guy I'm really looking at, whether it's next year or the year after, I don't think it's going to be much longer than that. This Tomasino kid's good. I've watched a lot of prospects come in and out of the door over at Bridgestone Arena. This Tomasino kid is good, and I'm really excited to see him play. He just plays offensively. There's a lot of things to like about him. That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Joe. You know, if Tomasino comes in, the first-round pick from a year ago, had a great season, a monster season in the OHL, where do you put him? Because he's a center iceman. I guess you could move him to the wing if you really wanted to. But you've got Duchene. You've got Johansson down the middle in your top six. You've got Bonino as your third-line center right now. Where do you put Tomasino in this lineup if he's going to play his natural position and come in? That's going to be something that David Poile and John Hines are going to have to figure out, whether it's Tomasino, Tolvanen, Trennan, whoever. When you're talking about bringing in young talent, it's not just as simple as just placing them into lineup. There's some moving parts that have to be taken into account here too, and that's the challenge of trying to do this.
Right, because if you've got Tomasino centering a checking line, then how much good are you doing for yourself there?
I mean,
this is where maybe Bonino gets moved. Certainly we think there's a pretty good chance that something happens with Turris, but also how fast is he really ready next year? Because I look at windows, and I think with this team, I mean, you still look at it in one-year segments too. What does next year bring? Adam Vingan brought up a word recently that I hadn't really thought of, but, you know, fan apathy. It's crazy to think that. Again, like last year, they won the division. They've been a playoff team. The problem is when you raise expectations like they did, everyone looks at at things after that differently. So if you have largely the same team and you're just kind of slogging through regular season, what does that mean to the fan base? I mean, I think you've got to give people a reason to be excited about something new next year, just from a – and this is just really more from a – almost from a business standpoint of, like, hey, look, this is going to be different. I think there's a lot of Predators fans who are like, I can't go with the same core and think it's going to be different now.
Right. It goes back to making this group uncomfortable. I mean, that's the best word I can use to describe it. And I've never really been a person that's – hey, you need to change things just for the sake of changing things. Like, I think that gets done sometimes in sports, and it really serves no purpose. So I'm not saying that, but it's pretty obvious looking at this roster and the way it's been trending and the fit that's going on with some of the group in the top six. This ain't working. Like, it's not working, and it's not showing any signs that it's going to work. So in order to change that up, particularly with the contract situation that you're in with a bunch of guys locked into long-term deals, I'm letting Granlund go. I'm letting Craig Smith go. There's no way I'm bringing either one of those two back. And I like Craig Smith. I think he's been a really good player for the Predators. He disappears come playoff time. Go look at the numbers. That's not me saying that. Go look at him. He doesn't score in the playoffs. That does not help you.
And this postseason, he made some really, really crucial bad mistakes.
And he's on the other side of 30. So, look, I think Craig Smith's a really good player. He's going to get a job somewhere else if the Predators don't decide to bring him back. But that's some money you can save right there, not bringing back Granlund, not bringing back Smith, letting some young guys come up and see if they can infuse some life into this group. That's the main thing. You heard Crispy talk about it. They got to play with some urgency. I mean, Poile brought that word up 4 or 5 times yesterday. There's got to be some desperation, some urgency, some jam to their game that they've just been missing. And it's got to come from somewhere.
And I think that's got to be new personnel in some way. I'm going to quote Vingan's story. He posted it on The Athletic about Poile and the situation. Here's an agent he quoted. I really don't see any reason for optimism. I don't see them achieving anything better than they've already achieved. They're buying the name brand and not looking under the hood a lot of times in their acquisitions and their signings. You can't move these deals. They're stuck. They're deadly. You can't really change the face of the team. Now, that may be true.
Words, yeah.
The end of that may be true, may not be true. I think all the young guys could work out beautifully and wonderfully, but I think that you've got to try to defy that last sentence and do something else with somebody proven in this league and bring them in.
When we come back, we'll dive into some Vols talk. David Ubbin from The Athletic will join us. Always look forward to having David on each and every Friday. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.